As the companions approached the ville, they could see that cutting through the fields was the remains of a pre-dark road that led directly to the front gate. The surface was cracked in spots, with a lot of potholes filled with loose stones as a makeshift repair. However, it was serviceable and easy walking for the horses. Staying alert, the companions kept off the road and rode their beasts along the berm. The uneven ground slowed them considerably, but bitter experience had taught them that anything that seemed too good to be true usually was. A repaired road often meant booby traps hidden under the pre-dark asphalt, deadfalls, landmines, or worse. Reaching blaster range, the companions broke the canter of their horses into a trot, then proceeded along in a slow walk. But they always kept moving. A sitting target was just as bad as rushing headlong into the unknown. Craning his neck, Ryan could see that the wall around the ville wasn't made of stone blocks, but was a line of pre-dark trucks, or rather, just the trailers. The cabs that pulled the trailers were gone, but the huge metal boxes sat end to end to form an angular barrier. The metal sides were streaked with layers of old rust, the open area under the trailers packed solid with pre-dark debris, broken sidewalk slabs, bricks, wag engines, and similar trash. It was an imposing tonnage of debris that would be impossible to move without some major explo charges and an army of men with shovels. As the companions got closer, there were unmistakable signs of old battles on the trailers. Blaster holes, scorch marks from Molotovs, gray streaks from ricochets and such. Loose sand was trickling from a few of the small cracks in the trailers, while the larger rents had been patched with sheets of old iron. Ryan and JB glanced at each other and nodded in appreciation. It was triple smart for the locals to pack the trailers with sand from the nearby desert. The stuff was easy to obtain, there was a limitless supply, and the more the trailers weighed, the harder it would be for an invader to get through them.
Good design.
Checking the draw on his Sig Sauer, Ryan was forced to agree. This wasn't a ville, it was a fort, as big and well-protected as Front Royal, his home back in the east. Then, the startling similarities of the towers behind the wall hit him hard. They were positioned in almost exactly the same formation as those back in Front Royal. How could that be?
Lover?
Yeah, I noticed. Might just be a coincidence. Most people made crossbows after Skydark for the same reasons. They were easy to build, and you could use the arrows over and over again.
Great minds think alike and all that.
Make that great mind singular.
For once, Mildred agreed with the old man. In her travels with the others, she had witnessed far too many examples of Carl Jung's theory of the group subconscious mind of humanity for there to be any other explanation, in her opinion. All living things were bound together. Easing their mounts to a stop, just outside of arrow range, the companions let the animals catch their breaths for a few minutes. This also gave the Sekhmen a chance to see them first and spread the word. There was no reason to startle the guards and start a fight. Spilling blood wasn't a good way to start negotiations with a local baron. Walking their mounts closer, the companions studied the gate. It was very impressive. The broad gap between two of the trailers had been bridged by a concrete lintel to form an arch. Set below that was a formidable gate made of the doors taken off wags and welded together into a single homogeneous slab. It was as lumpy as oatmeal and looked as impregnable as a redoubt blast door.
A door of doors. I wonder if their baron is a poet.
Just then, a bright blue light of an alcohol lantern appeared, moving across the top of the wall and starting to come their way. To the east, dawn was rising. But the shadows were still thick across the world, and the bobbing lantern moved along like a lost star.
We'll soon find out.
Ryan walked his horse a little bit closer. A man carrying the lantern appeared at the edge of the metal wall. Wearing loose clothing and a leather vest, the Sekhmen had a tremendous beard, pleated into two strands. As well as the lantern, he was also carrying a bolt-action long blaster, with a hand on the trigger. Tromping over to the last trailer, the Sekhmen stopped near a crude set of tremendous hinges that supported the colossal gate.
Advance! Give the password!
Sorry, don't know it. We're strangers, wrists, looking for a place to stay tonight.
Yeah? What kind of jack you got?
Brass, 4 rounds.
Packed with dirt, probably. Useless as tits on a turd.
In a smooth move, Ryan pulled out his Sig Sauer.
Be glad to show you.
Shaking the reins, Christy walked her horse closer between the two men.
What is the name of this place?
Slowly, both of the men eased their aggressive stances. But their hands didn't stray far from their blasters.
This be Broke Neck! And where are you folks from?
All over. Here and there. North and south.
Yeah? A real son of traitor, are you?
We've traveled with him some.
There was a pause as a second guard appeared on top of the wall. This clean-shaven man was holding a loaded crossbow. The two Sec-men held a short conference. The first Sec-man stroked his beard thoughtfully.
Now that might be flat rock, or it could be a stretch.
Yeah, well, either way, that's a lot of iron for a bunch of pilgrims.
That's because we're not pilgrims. You folks interested in doing biz, or should we keep moving?
The bearded Sec-man walked to the very edge and angled his lantern to make it shine on the companions.
Yeah, just keep your jets cool, Wrist. I was just... Black dust! You only got one eye! Harp, look! One eye, by thunder!
The second guard rushed over.
Oh, it's Ryan. It's gotta be. Look there. One of them's dark, another's pale, she's got red hair, and that guy's wearing glass on his face. I never did understand that part before.
Already alert, the companions instantly drew their assortment of blasters, snapping off safeties and working bolts, without the slightest regard of being seen. Instantly, both guards leveled their weapons. Then the man with the beard slowly lowered his rifle and placed it on the wall.
Easy there, folks. Easy now. We don't want any blood spilt between us.
And what if my name is Ryan?
Then the Baron will want to talk to you right away. We've been expecting you for a long time, but thought you'd be coming from the south in the direction of the ocean gulf.
Mildred lifted both eyebrows at that, but said nothing. The rest of the companions followed suit. What was going on here? There was only one possible answer that made any sense.
Seems like your Doomy made a mistake.
The two Sec-men frowned at that.
Baron Hammond don't make many bad calls. More likely, you're lying.
Yeah, but even if you are, it don't matter. Baron wants to meet anybody with just one eye. If you're Ryan, good. If you're not, then we can offer you haven from the cold hearts hunting folks like you.
Haven. There was a word the companions hadn't heard or been offered for a while. Aside from Tucsonville to the south, their reception in the zone had been poor at best. Christy's hair flexed gently around her shoulders. If there was any danger here, she couldn't sense it. But then, when dealing with a Doomy, anything was possible.
We accept your offer of haven.
No offense, but I have never heard of a Doomy Baron before.
No offense taken. Baron Hammond is probably the only one around.
The bearded Sec-man advanced a step, then lowered the lantern for a better look.
Your name, Doc?
Puzzled at first, Mildred started to speak, then realized the connection.
Close enough, but I prefer Mildred.
Fair enough.
The Sec-man looked her over closely.
Funny, you don't seem frozen to me.
That comment caught all of the companions by surprise. Way back in the 20th century, Mildred had gone into the hospital for a simple operation, but there had been serious complications, and the doctors had desperately attempted to save her life by using an experimental cryogenic freezer unit. The device had worked, and Mildred awoke 100 years later, alive and healthy, but nearly a full century after the near-total destruction of civilization.
Well, you'd best get inside. There's muties out at night, and they love to eat people if they can't get at our pigs.
Pigs?
Shifting the crossbow, the man shrugged.
Ought to go crazy for them. They'll pass up a dying man to steal a pig. Damnedest thing I've ever seen.
Something special about your pigs?
Well, they're not muties, if that's what you mean.
I hate pigs.
Turning toward the Ville, the bearded man cupped a hand to his face.
Open her up, Charlie! This be Ryan!
If there was a reply, it couldn't be heard. But soon, the massive gate began to sluggishly move in jerks until there was a wide enough passage for a single horse and rider to traverse. Holstering his piece, Ryan took the lead and headed his horse inside, his every muscle tense and ready for betrayal. A Doomy. A human muty. Sometimes they could read minds as well as get glimpses of the future. Of course, once a person knew what the future was, since it hadn't happened yet, they could try to change it. So the main power of a Doomy was keeping their visions quiet and working in secret. But this Baron Harmond had broadcast his visions to his Sec-men. Did the rest of the Ville also know, or were they kept in the dark? Ryan wondered. As the rest of the companions rode through the formidable gate, Ryan glanced sideways and saw that JB had a hand buried in his munitions bag. Any trouble from the locals and that gate would be coming down louder than Skydark. Past the gate was a wide strip of concrete that looked fairly new. The surface was roughly smooth, but seemed to sparkle in spots, casting tiny rainbows from the lanterns held by the armed Sekhmen.
Careful of that glass! Even if your horses are shy, that'll cut them bad.
Thankful of the warning, the companion steered clear of the studded concrete. It seemed a poor barrier to stop horses, but what else could a field of glass be for? Doc rested a hand on the Lama and answered the unspoken question.
Escaping slaves.
Attacking muties.
Jack shook the reins on his horse. Irregular rows of adobe buildings rose in the murky shadows past the lanterns. Only a few windows were lit. Most of the wooden shutters were closed tight. There was the smell of frying onions and wood smoke in the chill morning air. Filling the sky, orange glowing clouds rumbled ominously. A streak of purple zigzagged across the heavens, and sheet lightning flashed somewhere in the murky distance.
Must have been a lot of hard work laying out all of that glass.
Bet your ass, and sharp enough to rip the tires off any two-wheeler.
A reasonable enough explanation, even if it did sound a little rehearsed. JB guided his mount around the unusual trap. Most villes had pitfalls or sandbag nests for defenders to shoot from in safety, but this felt like something done as protection for a specific enemy.
Get a lot of trouble from bikers?
Nope, never even seen one. This way, folks. We already sent word to the Baron that you're coming.
They've never seen a bike, Ryan.
No need to convince me after that freezer remark.
Ryan looked over the sleepy ville. The people were starting to stir. As window shutters swung open, the startled men and women began to point and stare at the companions.
Harmond is a doomy for sure. It seems a triple damn good one.
That doesn't mean he's a good baron like your cousin in Front Royal or Baron O'Connor back in Tucson.
You can load that into a blaster.
The strong resemblance of the Ville to Front Royal was suddenly explained. The Doomy had to have seen the Ville, either in the mind of somebody passing through or with the long sight that some of the mental muties possessed. Suddenly, the gates began to ponderously rumble closed. Ryan slid off his mount.
Okay. We walk from here. The horses are tired enough after that hard ride.
Besides, they would need the horses to be rested if they had to race out of here with a mob of Sekhmen coming after them. Exactly how much did this Baron Harmond know? Was the existence of the redoubt still a secret? Did he know why they were empty and where the pre-dark soldiers had gone? What about Dean and the traitor? There were a lot of mysteries that a friendly Doomy could answer. Trouble was, most of those mental muties were borderline crazy, and a lot of their answers didn't make a whole lot of sense. Like calling Mildred Doc and saying the JB had glass eyes. The answers could only be understood after you knew the truth.